Now, what do you do when you retire from politics? You head to America and reflect on Australia. That's what my next guest, Peter Beattie, did. After being Premier of Queensland for 9 years, Peter resigned and went to LA as the Queensland Trade Commissioner for 2 years. 7 years later, he returned to Australia after also living in North and South Carolina as well as New York City. During this time, he and his wife, Heather, immersed themselves fully in American life. But that distance from Australia also gave Peter the opportunity to reflect on his home country through the prism of the United States of America. What does Australia do better than America and vice versa? What can America teach Australia? Well, with elections looming and turbulent politics, to say the least, if you look at some of the headlines from today, it's timely to have Peter on Saturday Extra. Oh, and he has written a book too, called Where To From Here Australia. Peter joins me from the ABC's Brisbane studios. Welcome, Peter.
Thank you, Geraldine. Thank you for having me.
Well, now, you've been causing quite a stir since the launch of your book with the discussion about abolition of the states. Now, I know it's not as straightforward as this, but you do mount a case, either fund the states properly or get rid of them. Now, how is this being received coming from a former premier like yourself?
Well, it's getting mixed reviews. Obviously, those who are worried about the expenditure of the taxpayer dollar and who believe, like I do, that we're overgoverned, 24 million people and we've got six states, two territories and a federal government. But there are those who, for parochial reasons, and I respect their view, say, well, look, I don't trust the Commonwealth and I would rather have a government closer to me. So it's a long debate, but the bottom line, I guess, Geraldine, is this: reform of the Federation is just long overdue. There have been a string of High Court cases that have eroded the power of the states, which means we've got a whole lot of duplication now in health and education, planning approvals, you name it, and that costs people's money. So at some point we've got to reform the Federation. We just can't keep paying for it.
And you also talk about four-year fixed terms. So you allowed yourself to dream and think in this book.
Dream. Yeah, well, that's right.
Even unfixed five-year terms, you say, in Britain, are better than the ones we have now.
Well, that's right, because what happens, and I'm not being political when I say this, and I think people would appreciate that, what happens when you've got three-year terms, and that's never 3 years, what it means is governments govern for 2 years and then spend the next year getting re-elected. So you really get 2 years of government. It's very hard for any government, regardless of whether it's Liberal, National Party, Labor, whoever, Greens, to make the really tough decisions to set the nation on the nation-building strategy that it needs. So what happens is they wimp the tough decisions. And all you've got to do is look at the current debate on tax, regardless of your politics. Where are the tough decisions? It's all about, we're going to get re-elected, there's an election this year. My view is that if you have four-year fixed terms, everybody knows the election date, it gives government the opportunity to take a mandate and actually implement it.
Is this something that you reflected on in the US? Because obviously they do have this, for the presidential,
yes, they do.
They have this fixed date. It's certainly not like that in all the various states, is it?
No, of course not. And the US is, in fact, the United States of America. The states have a lot more power in the United States than the states in Australia do. And frankly, that's not necessarily a good thing. Getting uniformity is very hard in the US. And often you find California, for example, will be a leader when it comes to emissions control on vehicles. And then that may be followed by the state of New York. It may be followed by other states. And then eventually you'll get to a national standard, but it will take years. And a good example of how silly things can get is the Americans obviously continue with miles. They use inches, they use pounds. They've never converted to metric.
No.
And that was because the states basically weren't prepared to do it.
And I heard the other day from a visiting American who I was invited to dinner with that daylight saving is decided at county level. And he maintained I think it was Nevada. It was either Nevada or Nebraska. There were three different time zones in the state.
Well, that's right. And the whole thing gets out of control. Realistically, in a global economy, you need to have standards across the country, or at least you have to have national regulation. And that's very difficult. And this is one of the things that the Americans have to grapple with, because they strongly support globalization. Their companies are around the world. But as they become more global, some of these antiquated practices at home will have to change.
What's your overall feeling about the US, Peter? I mean, you came away, according to your book, very attached to the country. What is it that attracts you?
What I like about Americans is their openness. They're very warm. They're very friendly. But there are a lot of things about America that are also negatives too. I hate their gun culture. That just frankly is insane when you see the number of tragedies that have happened there, and yet they won't change the law. And there's no likelihood of it changing the law because their political system, in a lot of ways, they actually got it wrong, believe it or not. I think they'd be better off under the Westminster system. They hated George III so badly in the War of Independence. They brought in this system that basically has the president out of the parliament or the Congress. He therefore doesn't necessarily control the budget. You can have differences in the houses. And the way their boundaries are drawn up for their Congress, a lot of them obviously are drawn by the states. And that means the National Riflemen's Association can control, in a way, because of their power, and they are very powerful. They control who, in fact, will be, say, the Republican, and in some cases, the Democrat candidate, which means that if they influence who is selected in the primaries, because they put money into it, that person, because of how the boundaries are drawn up, is then very likely to get elected. So they have all these people in Congress who will do exactly what the National Riflemen's Association says.
Well, in fact, we're going to cover this year. There's some very interesting writing coming out now that there are a lot of the sociologists and political scientists are realising that the Bernie Sanders, Donald Trump phenomenon is not going to go away.
No.
They're really looking closely, and they're calling it like a revolution, the closest that you're going to have to a voting revolution that we've ever had in the US.
Yes.
And the alleged gerrymanders by some of these very wealthy Americans in those boundaries you're talking about is incredibly serious. And they've actually put their effort into governorships rather than the presidency, arguably. And
well, that makes sense. I'm sorry, Gerald.
No. Do you agree?
Oh, absolutely. Look, that makes sense because if the states are drawing the boundaries, they draw these rorted boundaries.
Yes.
I had a look at one of the national polls, and if you take out the Republican safe seats and the Democrat safe seats, in one congressional election, there were only 25 seats that were up for grabs. So they were the only ones that were going to determine who controlled the Congress, the lower house, because they were just gerrymandered. And unlike us in Australia, we have a national system where the states don't control the boundaries. They're controlled by an independent group of people who draw them up fairly. That's not what happens in the United States. You know, American politics is broken. And you mentioned Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump. They are a reaction to what's happening politically. Donald Trump, it's a reaction to Americans hating what happened at September 11, hating the fact they're not as powerful as they used to be. His line about I'm going to make America great again is what resonates. On the other side, you've got Bernie Sanders, who's basically saying those crooks in Wall Street caused the global financial crisis. They're making huge amounts of money. And the average, if you like, middle-class family is doing it tough. Wages are down. So he's resonating as well.
Yes.
So they're really disenchanted people who have said, look, I've had enough of the lobbyists, the people who buy their politicians and political parties. And that's why, in a sense, Hillary Clinton, who I quite like and I think will win in the end, she is suffering a little bit because she's seen it as part of the old politics. And she has to do something about that than to win the election.
But look, I mean, we just haven't got an awfully long time left. But you, for instance, said, notwithstanding all of the capital that's available in the US, and you make the point, I think they're just very open to innovation and to trying new things, that Canada is actually much more pro-business because of its tax regime, that America is not a low-taxing country, and that we don't properly praise our public service systems knowledge. Our red tape is manageable, you say. So very interesting sort of cross contradictions, I suppose, in people might think in those observations.
You know, Geraldine, the interesting thing is the home of free enterprise, which is brilliant when it comes to innovation. The United States leads the world in innovation and commercializing it. The universities are very, very good, but the bureaucracy is not.
No.
And ours is much, much better. And I'll give you an illustration about the tax system. I had a relationship with Clemson University in upstate South Carolina. At the time, we were living in North Carolina. And at the end of that year, we moved to live in New York. I had to put in a state tax return for South Carolina, North Carolina, New York, and a federal tax return as well.
My goodness.
So if we ever complain about the Australian tax system or the Australian tax office, we should pause and say, we are well off. Mm. We are very well off.
So what can we learn then?
I think we can learn the good things about America is this: their innovation, their support for entrepreneurship, the fact that if someone fails, they're prepared to let them have another go without being judgmental. That is a very vital part of the future knowledge economy. And the commercialization of their research, they are brilliant. That's what we can learn. Second thing I think we can learn is that their politics is broken. We have got a much fairer system in this country, not just in electoral boundaries, our public service commitment. We don't have the, and I use the word corruption in inverted commas, but we don't have the corruption of lobbyists in our system anywhere near to the extent the Americans have. Our politicians can be thrown out of office a lot easier than they can in the United States. That's a good thing. So we should learn the smart things and ignore the dumb things. And I'll finish on this quick story, if I can, about guns. We should be very grateful of the fact that John Howard brought in those tough laws against guns. And there's a really crazy story. There was two guys in the southern part of the United States. They started a business whereby if a person, a family member, died, you could take the ashes after cremation and they would put them in bullets. So you could actually send your loved one off in style by going shooting with bullets containing the ashes of your deceased loved one.
Is that a true story?
It's a true story. That was flabbergasted. I just couldn't believe it. And in fact, someone in the health department did put out a warning saying, you need to be very careful that if you shoot an animal with these ashes and then you eat them, that animal could well be contaminated.
Oh, Peter, that's really bizarre.
That's America. It could only happen in America, Geraldine.
All right, Peter. Well, look, you have some very interesting observations too about coming to terms with the detritus of your life and leaving it aside so that you can actually enjoy this stage of your life. So I do hope you do enjoy this next stage of your life. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Geraldine, and all the best.
Former Queensland Premier Peter Beattie. And they're amazing stories. And he's written about his time living in America and reflections on both US and Australia in Where To From Here Australia? It's published by Strictly Literary, which is a rather cute name. Well, coming up next, someone else who likes to be very cute with words and thoughts, British writer Alexander McCall Smith on the topic of love.